Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1, sponsored by Sullis. Finish school and not sure what's next? Explore further education and training options at thisisfet.ie.
Today with Claire Byrne on RTÉ Radio 1.
Now it's time for our Friday gathering, and I'm joined by Minister of State at the Office of Public Works and Fine Gael TD for Limerick County, Patrick O'Donovan, who's in our Limerick studio, Sinn Féin TD for Donegal, Pádraig McLoughlin, Brenda Power, columnist with the Irish Daily Mail and the Sunday Times, and Christina Finn, political correspondent at thejournal.ie. And you're all very welcome. Thank you for joining us. We have to start with the budget really today, and Patrick O'Donovan, I'll come to you first, because from what we've heard today from the ESRI, and we were talking to Cliff Taylor about this earlier as well, it seems today that unless the government comes back now with another whack of money next year, the plan to cushion people who are on lower incomes from the cost of living crisis, it just won't work.
Well, I don't accept that, Claire. I think if you look at what IFAC have said, and they're the independent body charged with actually looking over the financials of the state, they have given this budget a fairly a good nod of approval in their commentary, and they have oftentimes been extremely critical in the past. So if you look at what the government had to do in the time frame that we had to do it, with the amount of money that was available, this is the largest investment of people's money back into the Irish economy and back into people's pockets ever. 90,000 million, 11 billion more than last year. So the significance of this can't be understated in the context of how we managed the economy before now to make sure that we actually had the financial reserves available to us to avoid, for instance, what's happening in the United Kingdom, where they're borrowing to reduce tax and borrowing to ease the burden of people's energy costs, which we're not in the position that we have to do because we ran budget surpluses against the advice of a lot of political and economic commentators who said over the years, sure, we should have spent more. Can you imagine where we'd be now if we did that?
Yeah, I mean, I think the ESRI report today is interesting in that it welcomes a lot of what has been done. But it does say really clearly that we're going to run into trouble towards the latter part of 2023, especially those who are on lower incomes. And the Taoiseach himself was out the morning after the budget saying, look, we have the reserve fund there. And he suggested that you may need to dip into it as early as next year.
Well, sure, that's the reason that we put it in place in the first instance. And some opposition parties were just saying, spend everything and don't have any reserve. But just to get back to what the ESRI did say, they did say that the measures will insulate most households from rising prices. And they go on to say that the research shows that the welfare increases in 22 and 23, together with the one-off measures, which were also a lot of opposition people were opposed to, are large enough to leave the lowest income households better off on average than they would be had the welfare payment rates been left in line with inflation. So that's what the ESRI have actually said.
Yeah, is that what the reserve fund is for, though?
No, the reserve fund is what it says on the tin. It is to make sure that this illegal war that's currently been perpetrated in Ukraine, we don't know how it's going to pan out, whether it's going to get worse. I mean, now we have situations where we have a gas pipeline into Germany being sabotaged. So we don't know what's actually in the offing for this country and other European countries. And that's part of what's going to be discussed today at the European Council of Ministers meeting. So it would be absolutely totally and utterly foolish and reckless to have taken the advice of some opposition parties to spend everything in the backdrop of what's happening in Europe.
But was that your advice, Pádraig McLoughlin?
No, but there's no doubt the government had significant resources here in this budget, and we had a profound housing crisis before it started. We had a shambles of a health service. Of course, the minister would know because his local hospital, University Hospital Limerick, has the biggest crisis in terms of beds in the state, and we will continue to have both crises now into next year because they have made the wrong choices. If you look at capital investment in social and affordable housing, it's just not there. If you look at investment in acute beds, community beds, it just isn't there. They announced the extension of the GP card. The GPs are going crazy. They haven't been consulted. Their previous commitments for children around the extension of the card haven't been honoured because they don't have the resources in that system to deliver what needs to be done. So in terms of the big picture, if you step back from the fact that it did have huge resources and there was a lot of money given out, the decisions that they've made will not make any difference to the real crisis that face our people on an ongoing basis.
Patrick?
Well, it's interesting to hear Pádraic coming out on behalf of Sinn Féin opposing the extension of GP cards to people that are hard pressed, that are working up and down the country.
So there's no point doing that if you don't have the GPs to see people.
Yeah, well, the Department of Health will negotiate out this with the GPs, like it has always been the case. But I mean, over the last couple of days, I have to say, based on what I've seen, both in terms of the United Kingdom and in terms of Ireland, it now appears that Pádraic and Pearse Doherty are far closer to the Tory party than they are to Tory Ireland in terms of their economic philosophy. Just spend everything now, leave nothing in reserve. And by the way, in terms of their social welfare measures, and Minister Humphreys was on your programme, I think, or another RTE programme during the week, she made it very clear that, like, if you look at what the opposition were looking for, they looked for no once-off payments, they looked for no lump sums, they looked for no increases of bends in relation to fuel allowance. And now they're coming on and saying that even though the government have given a €400 once-off payment, they've widened the bends for fuel allowance to bring in about 90,000 other people, we'll have a €50 million additional needs payment scheme, even though Sinn Féin said there was only need for 15, and they're still not happy.
So, well, Pádraic, you're being compared to the Tories. Yeah, that can't be a comfortable place for you to be.
Of course, in Pádraic O'Donovan, you know, and Fine Gael, we would call them the Irish Tories, and much more in common with Liz Truss and all of them.
You want to check your recent record, Pádraic?
Britain has had to lend money to cut taxes on the wealthiest in that country to, you know, allow the bankers' bonuses to increase. But in Ireland, largely thanks to corporation tax intake, we actually had a very strong position in Europe. So this crisis, which is a crisis all across Europe, we were uniquely placed to do the right things in this country. It was an unprecedented opportunity. And as I say, particularly in the areas of housing and health, which everybody agrees are the profound crises that we have to start to turn around. You won't do it in 1 year, but you have to start to turn it around. There's no joy for people next year. And that's the biggest tragedy of the budget.
All right,
Claire, just on that, it's important.
Just quickly, just want to bring in the others here.
Oh, no, I get that. It's important to point out, though, that Pádraic now is saying that we agree that we have so much corporation tax. If you go back and check the sound bites for the last few Clare Byrne shows in the immediate aftermath of previous budgets, they were saying exactly the opposite, that the government shouldn't be relying on corporation tax. And here they are today, 180 degrees again away from their previous position.
All right, Christina, I'll bring you in here. How was the budget received in Leinster House? What was the form around the place?
Yeah, there was definitely more of a positive mood, I think, than any previous budgets over the last few years. I suppose the last 2 years obviously been dominated by COVID, so it was a very different kettle of fish. And there was definitely a lot of happy faces walking around the corridors of Leinster House. You know, some politicians saying, look, this is the first time maybe they've been able to, you know, go back to their constituents and say that they've been able to give them a lot more perhaps than in other years. You know, other years we had like the fiver here and there. But I think there definitely is a feeling now as the week or the days go on that there were, you know, gaps there that perhaps weren't targeted there. People that are coming back to them saying that they've been missing out. Obviously, there's a lot of money for people like, you know, like electricity credits, and we have families and childcare and stuff like that. But there were things like the social welfare, a lot of people saying that actually that's a bit short than what is needed, particularly perhaps for older people, where people were looking for the €20. Heather Humphrey saying she couldn't go that far. The renters, we've already seen, yes, the €500 credit, welcome. Obviously, it's the first time ever, I think, that since 2017 that the government have intervened in that market in terms of giving some sort of money back to renters. But we already see Micheál Martin out this week saying, you know, kind of hinting, as you said, that more is going to be needed, that they want to build on that platform. And then I suppose the lower incomes, you know, there's a lot of talk about the higher tax band, people that hit that's great. They're going to get nearly €800 back in the year. But if you don't hit that tax band, it's not that much for you. And they're the people that are on the lower income. So there are issues that I think will come into play over the next week. And then not to mention, obviously, the concrete block levy, which definitely is causing a lot of concrete.
We'll come to that. I was just thinking about the phone-in that we had, Brenda, on the programme with the two ministers. We got quite a few calls. We had two on air, small landlords who weren't happy. They were expecting something in the budget. Do you think that was a miss by the government?
I do, yeah. I mean, I think part of the problem with the shortage of available housing for rent is the fact that there has been a flight of small landlords from the market, and there was nothing in this budget to keep them there. €500 tax credit to renters is a drop in the ocean compared to what the average rent in Dublin for one is now
covers but 7 days, I think. Even that.
But I mean, what you really need to do is to keep the mom and pop landlords, as they're called, the people who may have inherited a house or may have downsized and want to put their family home, their former family home.
What do you think could have been done? Because Pascal Donoghue, in response to that, said, "Look, if I did that for landlords, I'd have to do it for farmers and for
tax." Well, I mean, this is a crisis. Housing is a recognised crisis. You have students who cannot afford to live to rent a place near their college, commuting, sleeping on sofas, sleeping in their cars. This is a crisis that really requires emergency measures. Mm-hmm. And if you were to do something on tax akin to what the institutional investors get in terms of renting tax reliefs for those people, I mean, something like 250,000 vacant properties across the country. There is now, I think it's a €10,000 grant, refurbishment grant, available to anybody who wants to put them up for rent. So the incentives are there, except the tax just doesn't make it worth people's while. Yeah. And that would have been an easy fix for a relatively small number of people affected.
Was that a big miss, Patrick? Something for smaller landlords, some sort of a tax break?
Well, smaller landlords, their income is derived the same as anybody else, so they will actually see an increase in their take home at the end of the week, thanks to the fact that the government has increased the personal cut off rate to get to 40,000 from 36,800, and as well as that, there's also an increase in people's individual tax credits. So an awful lot of, as Brenda said, their accidental landlords are terrified at the moment when they hear what is planned by some parties for them, which is basically almost to lock them up. You have people all over the country at the moment who have, in some cases, negative equity. They have houses that were bought in the height of the Celtic Tiger. They'll never recoup the value of them, and they're an important part of the rental market. But unfortunately, if you listen to the narrative of some people coming out of Leinster House, they're almost a version of criminals. These are ordinary people in our community.
You're talking about Sinn Féin, are you?
Well, it's not just them. There's a few more on the hard left and the left over as well that want to go after individual landlords and drive them out of the country because they see them as some sort of a pariah. But ultimately, without these people, many of whom have young children in college, have to educate their own families, and it's a form of their income. Without them, can you imagine where our rental market would be? It would be in total and absolute shambles altogether.
You agree with him on that point, Brenda?
I do, yeah.
You've written about this.
Yes, I do. I know Sinn Féin have said that when they come to power, Ona Brin has said that he will ban landlords selling properties.
Imagine.
Selling their own properties, selling if they have tenants sitting, or from evicting tenants or putting tenants out to install their own family members.
So is it any wonder
that's
they want
not
to get
going to
out?
Encourage anybody to stay in the market if Sinn Féin are likely to be in power.
Corey.
This is nonsense. I mean, since 2017, you've seen the house prices increasing again. So they're returning back to Celtic Tiger numbers. So the accidental landlords who never intended to be there have been trying to move out of the landlord market now since 2017. So it's not a new phenomenon. It'll continue to be the case, particularly as the prices are increasing, and then get their investment back again. And that's they're entitled to do that. That's absolutely fine.
Well, they've also been told by Sinn Féin, just because you just said it was nonsense there, Sinn Féin have also threatened that if they get into power, they will rise the capital acquisitions tax to 40%, which means that any profit you make post a Sinn Féin government
on a house you sell.
I did read that.
Sorry, Brenda.
You're wrong there now.
Ona Brin responded.
So now's the time to sell.
Ona Brin has responded and quite frankly demolished your argument.
No, he hasn't actually. He demolished. Brenda
wrote an article dealing with the issue of Sinn Féin. Let me just tell you the facts, right? Hold on.
Okay.
I didn't interrupt you with respect, right? In Donegal in 2002, 560 public houses were built in 1 year. In the years from 2010 to 2021, by Patrick O'Donovan's party have been in government, Let me finish, Patrick, and I won't interrupt you when you respond.
So in terms of the
Patrick, we'll let Patrick make a point and then come back in then.
So what Patrick doesn't want to listen to is that their disastrous management of housing has pushed tens of thousands of families into the private rental sector, drove up rental prices, created this crisis. That's what his government have done. And in this budget, they haven't responded to that. So any type of distraction, isn't fooling anybody. That's why their opinion poll numbers are plummeting, why the respectability of their leaders are plummeting, because the next generation can see these guys have failed and it is time for change.
Can I ask you, sorry, Brenda, is that it?
So like you're the largest party in County Donegal. You're supposed to be holding the manager to account in County Donegal. You're supposed to be holding the executive to account. They've never had more money, and you're now coming on the radio saying, "Yeah, we're the biggest party in County Donegal, but it's not our fault." And your solution then is, "Oh, just put us in, and it'll get all better." I mean, that is a far-fetched one now, if I've ever heard it.
Brenda. I just wanted to come back to this particular point. Did Eoin Ó Briain, or did he not say that a key priority for Sinn Féin in power will be to prevent landlords selling properties with tenants? And did he or did he not say that he was looking at changing measures which allowed landlords to sell their properties, or at least to install their own family members into their own property? Did he or did he not say that? Because I have seen it in print and he has never denied
Careful
it.
He has said,
oh, that's rubbish. But he has never actually answered the fact that that is still on the record. Okay. In quotes from him.
Okay. In the context of the homelessness crisis, we have a reality here
this
now.
This is the Gerry Adams School of public Communication.
Brenda's not a public representative, but I am. I'm at the coal face. And families say to us, we're going to be forced
that
out of our
yes
home.
Yes or no answer.
Can I respond? Have some manners, please, right? So the reality is you have families coming to you saying, we're going to be put out of our house. We have nowhere else to go. So in the context of this homelessness crisis, Eoin Ó Briain said, we need to stop evictions at this moment in time, right? At this moment in time. That's his position. How Brenda can have a problem with that, I don't know.
What I have a problem with, and I mean, yeah, the issue that the point I'm making is that a private landlord, one of these mum and pop renters, as we say, who might want to install, for instance, a family member in their own property in future, will be denied the opportunity to do that.
I want to bring in Christina.
I suppose we're talking about a housing crisis and a rental crisis. I'm not sure the people here at the panel, but I actually am a renter. So actually hearing some of the back and forth and the tit for tat between the parties is actually something that is hard to stomach when you're someone that's actually in the rental sector, you know. So talking about where we've come from, you know, I've been in a renting position for over 10 years, started paying €500 when I first started renting in my mid-20s, now paying up to €1,500. So that's a huge jump that I've had to pay out, and so many other people have. When we're talking about landlords' rights, I think there's definitely a delicate balance. The narrative shouldn't be going out there that all landlords are out to, gouge their tenants, because that's just not the case. We have two situations where we have investment landlords, which are there to make a profit. There's no denying that, and they're making a good one on that with the tax breaks that they're getting. And we do have a lot of people that are in the sector that just want to perhaps get a bit of extra income in their retirement, and yes, the option is there to sell it on. There are definite issues with the evictions that are happening at the moment. TDs have told me up and down the country that people are coming into the constituency to say that they are getting notice to quits that are going to come online in the next 3 months, and those people have to go somewhere. So yes, those mom and pop landlords might have a child that wants to go into that property, but at the same time, there needs to be a bigger picture look at this, because if that person goes in there, that's pushing someone else out. So there has to be intervention, because it's only exasperating the problem. So I don't think saying, look, we shouldn't, there's no way we can curtail landlords' rights without giving them something perhaps on the back of it. But there does need to be, I think, definitely intervention, more so than there has been government-wise in the rental sector.
Okay,
I just don't think the tax credit's not going to work. And as we said, the landlords, yes, they do have the rights, and they do need to be making some sort of profits or, you know, income from the reason that they're doing it. That's the whole reason. But there does need to be a balance of what that means. Other countries, like in Europe, they have that very fact that you cannot sell a property. You can't ask people to leave. Germany, my cousin lives over there. That's just a no. Like, he couldn't believe that people would be asked to leave before they can sell on.
Because
that
you can
property.
Get a 20-year lease in Berlin.
Exactly. So there needs to be a bigger picture.
I just want to move on to that concrete block levy, which was mentioned earlier on, and there's been fairly significant pushback, Patrick O'Donovan. I think you'd agree, from within the government parties on this one. Did you see that coming? Did you know about it?
Well, when the effective block and the apartment issue was raised in the Dáil back in November, it was stated at the time that there was going to be a levy in the industry. So it didn't come as a surprise, to be quite honest.
But this isn't a levy on the industry. Well, it's a levy on the people who are buying the houses.
And as the Tánaiste just said yesterday, if you wanted to introduce, I think it was Tachín O'Callaghan he was responding to, if you were to introduce something of a complicated profit tax, for instance, it'd probably be wind up challenging the court in relation to the building companies, it'll still have to be absorbed somewhere. And the Tánaiste and the Taoiseach both made this comment as well, that when the defective block and mica and pyrite issue was discussed in the Dáil, it was accepted that we were going to have to socialise an element of the cost in relation to what will probably wind up to be in the region of 6,000 million. Now, it'll bring in a relatively small amount of money when you compare it to the total cost. It'll probably be about 80 million a year. So in the scheme of things, and by the way, concrete products at the moment, since Michael Noonan's time, is dealing with a different VAT rate. The VAT was reduced by us in government at a time when we needed to stimulate the market when the country was flat on its back. So the concrete products at the moment are paying a different rate of VAT, for instance, than other building products in the same industry.
It's just a strange logic. I mean, everybody agrees that there is a housing crisis, and yet you're going to impose this extra cost on house buyers or people who are trying to renovate. And on the other hand, you're saying it's not going to bring in very much really in the context of what we need to deal with mica.
There's two things. First of all, the tax taxpayers of Ireland are going to take the whole cost anyway, because it's either going to come out of general day-to-day expenditure through the Exchequer, or it'll be a combination of that plus a levy. Now, the final decision in relation to it will be taken in the context of the finance bill. I mean, I suppose what was announced on Tuesday was the rough outline of what a levy potentially would introduce. And if there are, you know, members of the House who feel that there's a way in which this can be ameliorated, the Minister for Finance, I'm sure, will be welcome to all suggestions. But the very fact that the state is taken onto its balance sheet, the poor type of construction that was allowed here for so long. And I go back to the point again about Donegal County Council. You know, we have to ask ourselves in relation to local authorities up and down the country, what level of oversight is being attached by local authorities in respect of some of what has been allowed
all
to
right.
happen
well,
in this
I want
country.
To be careful about apportioning blame when it comes to that particular issue.
But I said all local authorities.
I know you did. I know you did. I don't want to go any further down that road. Now, on the concrete block levy of 10%, Pádraig, what's your party's position on that?
Yeah, they've made a mess of it, the government. I mean, you should have a levy on the banking sector. You should have a levy on some of the big developers, particularly those who are connected.
We do have a levy on banking sector.
Defective buildings and apartments and are clearly connected to that, and indeed those responsible. So there is a place for a levy, but the way this has been handled is an absolute mess. There will be a motion before the Dáil next Tuesday in a debate on this, so the government will have time to reflect on this. The other thing to say is that unfortunately the government have only allocated €65 million next year for dealing with pyrite, with defective apartments and with the defective homes in the west of Ireland. So, you know, they clearly don't see a scheme being up and running with that type of money on the table. That's what we really need to focus on, is rebuilding people's homes, their apartments, and giving them the resources to do it.
Mm-hmm. As somebody, Christina, who, I mean, you see the raw end of the mm-hmm. housing problem, what do you think of the logic of imposing a 10% levy on concrete blocks?
Yeah, it's a really difficult one to see, because obviously you can see the argument that a sector that was, you know, involved in building these homes that ultimately are disaster and catastrophic for people to live in, that perhaps they should have to pay their way. But I think for a lot of people, what has their scratching their head really is, you know, I suppose the firms, and obviously we don't want to get into the actual details of everything, but I think accountability is what people are sort of at home probably thinking about in terms of, you know, where is that? Where's the message here that you can actually get away with building and getting away with building such, you know, large swathes of properties that are ultimately not livable in. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, we're going to have the taxpayer that's going to have to foot the bill for that.
The taxpayer and the buyer of new homes.
Yes, I agree. I mean, there's no question but that this levy will be passed on to the home people building homes, people buying homes. I mean, I saw a quote from Micheál Martin saying, oh, you know, it is important, while this is a drop in the ocean towards the cost of redress in the mica situation, the message has to go out that such behaviour has costs. That's not the message that's going out. The message is the taxpayer will pick up the tab and once again profit is privatised, but losses are a public problem.
And €3,000, I think they said, give or take, on each home.
Up to
4,000. You know, it doesn't sound like a lot, but actually when you are looking to buy a property, that extra
£3,000... It's a lot when you have to pay it back.
Exactly, yeah. And if you're on that threshold of either, you know, multiply by the 3.5 or, you know, for the central bank rules, you know, every little penny counts in terms of trying to get onto a new build.
I want to talk as well about the voluntary contributions for parents, because where do we stand now, Patrick O'Donovan, on this? I mean, the minister saying yesterday that schools shouldn't ask for the contribution this year. So a lot of schools will have asked for that. I mean, I had an email from somebody here this morning on the programme who was asked for it this morning. Should they ask for a refund if they've paid it, or just ignore it if they're asked?
I think the Minister for Education's comments were clear in relation to this. I mean, the capitation grant for primary, post-primary schools has gone up significantly to address the energy needs of schools. On top of that, schools are also going to get enhanced capital to put solar panels on the roofs of all of their properties that will reduce considerably their energy requirements into the future. And they also have the existing insulation grants that can be done through the summer works and emergency work schemes. So as the Minister for Education said yesterday, I think it was, there's no reason now the schools should ask this year based on the funding that the Department of Education have made available to them. And she went further than that to say that if particular schools have individual problems, they should engage with the Department of Education to try and work them out.
Yeah, but you know that schools ask for voluntary contributions no matter whether there's an energy crisis or not.
I do know that. And as someone who taught in a school where, you know, some parents were never in a position to pay, where we had to accept that. Some parents were in a position to pay and never paid, and then some parents who couldn't pay but who wound up always trying to scrimp and scrape to get the few pounds together. It's an awful thing to have to ask on behalf of a school. So at least now this year we have through the government made a very big increase in terms of the individual capitation for schools across the country.
I don't understand this. I don't understand how the school needed the voluntary contribution last year and the year before.
Because the capitation was less clear.
I know that, but the bills are higher this year.
Yeah, and the minister has said, because like as I said at the first part of the programme, we don't know what's out there in terms of the bills that could likely come down in January, February, March. Again, another reason, a very tangible reason now that you've raised it, why this reserve fund, which was opposed by Parik and his colleagues, is going to be so important.
Do you understand, Brenda, how this can be done? How the minister can say you don't need to pay your voluntary contribution this year?
No, I really don't. And as we know, they're not voluntary contributions. And I've been listening to radio all week with parents ringing in and saying, look, there have been instances where children's names have been read out in class if their parents haven't paid these contributions. And schools are not asking for them for fun. You know, they obviously need this money to keep the lights on and keep the heat on. And they're going to need... they're going to need it just as much this year. Engage with the department is all well and good, and solar panels will be great. But in the immediate situation that we find ourselves in, where inflation is skyrocketing, the schools need this money, and I don't know how they're going to manage without it.
Is it a problem for schools now that the minister has said you don't need to pay your voluntary contribution?
I can see this being a real mess, because I do know people, my own friends, that have actually paid that earlier on in the year for a number of children. It's not a small amount of money. So are they going to get that back now that when people are not going to pay it? But at the same time, I take a real issue with the use of the word voluntary contribution. You know, having talked to people about it, it's not, and it puts a huge amount of pressure. It's fine if you can afford it, but like for parents that are really like absolutely struggling now heading into winter, the pressure that they're going to be put onto, I can see it largely being ignored, to be honest, that sort of call from the minister.
Should people get a refund, Pádraig, if they've already paid it?
Well, it's another mess, because the reason why schools have called for so-called voluntary contributions is because of the funding gap. My colleague Donegal O'Leary, our education spokesperson Sinn Féin, and Matt Carvey, they introduced legislation earlier this year on this issue. The government kicked it to touch for 9 months. And what it was looking at the funding gaps, then seeing how you're going to plug those funding gaps, and then removing these so-called voluntary contributions. That's the real issue, and I don't believe the government have done that.
Mm-hmm. But I'd imagine you'd be reluctant now to say to a school in your area, give back the money that the parents who've already paid the voluntary contribution have given you?
Like, the reason why they asked, let's call them what they are, contributions from parents to make up the funding gap for the school. That's always been the case, and it puts huge emotional pressure. They're given to the kids to give to the parents. There's a degree of embarrassment there. It's not a good practice, but I believe it's out of necessity, and that's what you need to address, is what are the funding gaps?
I'm watching the clock here and we've very little time left. Brenda, did you hear Liz Truss yesterday on the interview? interviews around the BBC. What did you think?
She finally surfaced because she had gone to ground since the what's been called the kamikaze.
The mini, the mini budget. Name for it.
I mean, this is the greatest self-inflicted devaluation of the pound in the, in British history. I mean, I've been listening to all kinds of speculation. I don't know if you listen to Alistair Campbell's podcast. He says, like, you could, if this was Labour who had shorted the pound in this way, the plod would be all over them, suspecting insider trading. It is just so inexplicable what they have done. And I heard Michael O'Leary comparing her pledge on capping energy prices to our bank bailout, because there's no knowing where energy prices
where
are going to end
finish up.
It's extraordinary, really, what's happening.
We were talking about this earlier in the programme with Cindy Yu from The Spectator, and she was saying that they'll hardly go down the road of changing the leader again. I mean, you can't imagine that they'll take that path.
And if they do, do you know who's going to get back in? Boris.
Boris waiting yeah, in the wings.
It's crazy that you actually think, I think, like, with the Queen passing away, I think it sort of gave her a bit of time to sort of put her head down, bed in, came out with the good energy credit, thought that energy cap, thought she was kind of going to be high flying, and then now we're already talking about a change of leadership so early in her days. It's some extraordinary stuff.
And the speculation is that if Kwasi Kwarteng goes, that she has to go too.
Yeah, I can't see any other way that would play out. We have to leave it there. Thank you very much indeed, Minister of State Patrick O'Donovan, Parry McLaughlin from Sinn Féin, Brenda Power and Christina Finn. Quick break before the news.